Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. Linda Hazelstrom is one of the state's premier writers, poets, and mentors of other writers. She's the author of many books, including the poetry collection Bitter Creek Junction and the nonfiction books Between Grass and Sky and No Place Like Home. If you joined the book club during our last membership drive, check your mailbox. A copy of Linda's book, The Wheel of the Year, A Writer's Workbook, is waiting for you. She joins us now from her home near Hermosa, South Dakota. Linda Hazelstrom, welcome to In the Moment.
Thank you very much, Lori. I'm glad to be here.
So this book, The Wheel of the Year, is going to be my personal writing companion, and I hope others will join me in this process throughout the year because it sort of walks you through the seasons of writing beyond the four seasons of spring, summer, winter, and fall. So let's start by talking about just what the seasons and writing have to maybe do with one another in the writing life.
Well, it's so easy. I'm a full-time writer, which means, of course, that I do plenty of laundry and fixing meals and that sort of thing, too. But I don't have a 9-to-5 job like many people do. And even I, when I'm able to concentrate on it, find it difficult to just keep writing all the time. You need kind of a constant refreshment. And so I started paying attention to the seasons. It's easy if you work inside an office, or in my office is in the basement, to kind of miss what's going on outside. And it's so important to get out and run into that and be refreshed by it. And I had operated with 8 seasons for a long time, so I thought, well, it's time to tell other people about this.
How did you operate with 8 seasons for a long time? Where did that begin for you?
Well, it's an old Celtic notion, and I don't know how long ago I got into it, but along about February, winter starts seeming really long, especially in South Dakota. And I noticed the old Celtic idea of Brigid, the goddess Brigid, who brought light to that season. And there's so much to Brigid. I wrote a whole, the chapter about it in the book. And it just seemed to help me get through February before you get to March. And then, of course, in March, we do have what's officially known as spring, but, of course, we live in South Dakota. Sometimes there's 4 feet of snow. So you need to sort of remind yourself that it's the equinox and that things are going to change. And one season just seemed to lead naturally into the others. Beltane, the summer solstice, of course, we all know about, but then in August, there's Lammas. The autumnal equinox, we do that, but then there's Samhain, which has been misinterpreted into Halloween, and there's so much more to it than that. So it just seemed logical to me to do this and to explore this in my writing and then to encourage other people. Every one of the essays about the season that I wrote in this book is sort of a demonstration of how to write an essay, too.
Right. Let's talk about essays for a few moments. You said it's a practice that might be falling into disuse a little bit. Not for me. I love to read them. I love to write them. But a lot of people don't quite understand what an essay might be anymore or how to write it.
Well, the lovely thing about the word essay is it means try. And you just try. There's a zillion ways to do it. I tend to be formal because I have a university background and I think about the beginning and the middle and the conclusion and all that. But you don't have to do that. You make an attempt at a topic and you follow the topic. Sometimes it seems to go wildly off topic, but it seems to come around. One of the examples that I give in that chapter about the vernal equinox, I started linking writing and cooking. And as an example of that, I was looking at my granola recipe.
Yes.
It's as important to decide how much honey belongs in it as there is to decide how many adjectives you need in your writing.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, where did I get this granola recipe? And I couldn't remember, but I remembered where I got my pumpkin bread recipe, and I told the story of that, too. I mean, I went off on a tangent, but it brought back a good memory and rounded it back around.
When you're writing like that... How do you know when it's a tangent that belongs in the final essay? Because when I read that chapter, it worked and immediately made me not only want to make your recipe, but it made me think of other recipes in my life. And then it also made me think of writing in an analogy that I'll remember and can use. So as a writer, did you know right away, oh, that works, and does it not work sometime?
Absolutely, it doesn't work sometimes. And no, I didn't know when it was. The drafts of that book stacked, you know, six or eight feet high. If I printed them all out, you keep reading it and you keep fumbling, and then all of a sudden, and one memory leads to another. As you said, it reminded you of recipes of your own, and at some point you start reining yourself in and you start saying, okay, what really works with this? And what do I put aside for some essay some other time? Hmm. But I don't always know if it works. When I know it works is when you just said it worked. Thank you.
Yeah,
that's
what
I'm sure.
Yes. I got up early this morning and spent some time writing just in preparation for the day and in preparation to talk with you. And immediately in my mind, I went to, well, where is this going to, you know, be? It's going to end up on my blog. And I'm just wondering what your relationship is with blogging then, because it seems now everybody can have one and we all have this place to sort of throw stuff, but maybe not everything needs to be thrown there. It's such a funny word, blog, in the first place. Where did that even come from? So all that was sort of coming out in the work that I was doing this morning, and I thought, I wonder what Linda thinks about blogging.
Well, the first time I heard that word, I thought, I will never have anything to do with anything that is called a blog. You know, this is an illustration of why you should never say never. But obviously, many more people are looking at the internet and online communications as ways of finding out things and being inspired and stuff. So I had to come around to the idea, I'm not ever going to be giving up books, and I think there's an awful lot of people that won't ever go to the blog or to the internet. But I think it's a good practice, a good thing to do. What worries me about them is that most people don't revise. You sit down and you blog, which could, the only things that come to mind is indigestion after a bad night. But that needs to be edited in order to be better, because none of us are that good the first draft. So I would just encourage people, think of it maybe in two different ways. If you have to spontaneously comment about something, then maybe it's perfectly legitimate to just spew it out and do it. But then if you want to say it as well as you can possibly say it, take that draft and keep working on it until you improve it. Because it can be better. But it's important to get those ideas down. We used to write them in our notebooks and write them in our journals. Maybe now we're going to be writing them online.
It could have the potential to sort of revitalize the essay as a form if people take it seriously and do what you just said, as in revising and sharing it. There would be, you know,
exactly,
a reason to have an essay in the world other than the books and the journals that you can read them in.
Something that's right. And perhaps I read your blog and I say, yes, but Lori, did you think about this? And then you respond and say, well, no, I hadn't thought about it quite that way, but what about this? And we have a conversation, and then perhaps both of us go off and write something about the subject that you were writing about that is better than either one of us could have done without that conversation. Yeah. I mean, that's another thing, is that writers are so often isolated, and I'm really isolated. Sometimes by choice.
Yes, beautifully so.
But this is a way for me to have conversations about writing with other interested people who are also writing.
Linda, who did that for you? Yeah, go ahead.
You and I have sat at this very table and discussed some of these subjects.
Yes.
But we can't always do that. So maybe this is a way that we can talk and encourage each other's work without necessarily seeing each other.
And I'm wondering who did that for you early in your career, before there was that kind of back and forth. Who helped you become a better writer?
Well, that's one of the things that I have had trouble with because it was very hard for me to send things out. And probably the first place that I realized that I could get encouragement was in school, was in high school, when I had teachers. Jeanette Kenyon in Rapid City comes to mind immediately. She was an English teacher. She was extremely strict about form and grammar and getting things correct. But she encouraged me, too. And I had similar experiences in college. But as far as exchanging work with individuals, I didn't much. Because it was a matter of mailing it somewhere and scribbling on it and mailing it back. And I just didn't do much of that. I was pretty shy about it.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is South Dakota treasure Linda Hazelstrom. The book we're talking about, she has many. This one is called The Wheel of the Year, a writer's workbook. And I'm going to be working through it personally this year and sharing that information and what I'm working on with Linda and with you on our website. I'll have more details about that. If you joined our book club last membership drive, a copy of this book is already in your mailbox, and you're welcome to either pass it along to a writer or just try it and try some of these exercises. Anybody who is just sort of entering, you know, the concept of sitting down with a notebook can probably benefit from walking through this, right, Linda?
Yes, and one of the things that I really tried to pay attention to, I'm a fanatic. I'm a writing fanatic. Nobody is going to, very few people are going to approach it as determinedly and as constantly as I do. So, for instance, the essay that I wrote for August is How to Write While Avoiding Writing. And then there's an intermission. This book covers 2 years of suggestions about writing, and the intermission is Honor Writing by Not Writing. So I don't want people to feel guilty, and so often that's what stops people. You have a good start, you do a few things, and then you get busy, life intervenes, as someone wrote to me the other day, and then you start feeling so guilty that you don't go back to it at all. Well, right. Go back to it. It doesn't matter how long it's been.
And I have sat at your table with other women who were there on retreat, and they were doing their own writing, and I remember being pleasantly surprised that some of them were not fanatics, but we're quickly becoming fanatics. What is it about once you start writing and telling your stories and getting things on paper that makes people come back for more?
There is no other story like your story. And the story that you do not write, no one else will ever write it. That's a quote from somebody, and of course I can never remember who. But no matter how brilliantly I may write, I don't write your story. And once you are gone, your story is gone, unless you have recorded it. And everyone has stories that are important to their children, to their friends, it doesn't matter, to yourself. I just think everyone needs to put that story down somehow. Now, some people paint their story, some people probably weave their story or quilt their story. That's okay. I just happen to only have one ability, and that's writing.
Let's talk about distraction. You said life intervenes, and some of those distractions are cooking, which you turned into an essay, and cleaning, which you have turned into poetry. So let's talk about this work that we do with our hands, from weeding the garden to, you know, tending the children, to doing the laundry. How does that fit into a writer's life?
Oh, beautifully, I think. I used to hate doing dishes. Now doing dishes is the time when I think about whatever I've been working on. I don't do them first thing in the morning. I go down and get busy writing, and at some point I hit a snag. And then I go up and do dishes. And while my hands are in the warm water and I'm thinking, how did this pan get this crusted? There's a part of my brain that is still working away at what I was working on this morning. And very often, I stop doing dishes and leave the suds in the sink and go rushing downstairs because I just solved that problem that stopped me.
Yeah.
That's
the life right there. Just describing that, that scenario, that's very much a writer's life.
And if you can do that, but if you're at work, you still, if you have a little notebook and you're thinking about something, you may suddenly get an inspiration. Well, quick, take a quick little note about it. I always have pieces of paper and pencils in my pockets and my purses and in the gardening cart and all over, because I'm always getting ideas. You may think your brain is a million miles away from whatever you were thinking about, that poem you were working on, and all of a sudden, bingo, here will come an idea, because your subconscious was doing it while you were doing something else.
Yeah. The book is called The Wheel of the Year, A Writer's Workbook. We're talking with Linda Hazelstrom, and if you joined the book club during the last membership drive, you already have a copy. Linda, where can people just want to read this and write along with me this year, where else can they find a copy?
They can order it from me, and it is... Actually, go to your friendly local bookstore and tell them the title and ask them to order it and get it wherever they can.
Sure.
Because we want to keep the local bookstores in business just the way we want to keep public radio in business, because what would we do without it? So,
thank you so much for that. And Linda, we're going to run out of time, but I want to say thank you for your time and thank you for the inspiration this morning. It was the first thing I looked at when I got out of bed, and it's a great way to start the day. So we will be in touch
you,
throughout this year as well.
You have inspired me.